It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to @LeachReport or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Basically, I think it's going to depend on this practice because, I mean, like I said, I haven't done anything yet. So if I'm feeling good and stuff like that, I think I'm going to go out and play. So, I mean, it's definitely just how I feel after practice today.
That was P.J. Washington in the Kentucky locker room yesterday afternoon here in Kansas City talking about his injured foot. And the Wildcats went out and practiced after that, and tonight we'll find out if he can go. Hello, everybody from Kansas City. Welcome in to the Leach Report. Game day in the NCAA Sweet 16. Although I guess we're trimming that down a little bit more now. We've got 12 left after last night's action. And we're glad you are with us. Our show is served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Mike DeCourcy will join us from the Sporting News, per usual, on Fridays. And Kent Spencer from WHAS-TV, who's here in Kansas City, was doing interviews yesterday, and we'll get his take on what he heard. And that's our guest lineup, presented by Sleep Outfitters. Let's get right to the Wildcat News of the Day, a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. And all eyes on P.J. Washington when this game starts, probably even before then, as he goes through warm-ups. The first 15 minutes of practice were open yesterday, but all PJ did was some stretching and I think maybe free throw shooting with his teammates. And then the media was taken out of the practice, and Kentucky had its full practice yesterday. And then we'll have a shoot around a little later today. And John Calipari yesterday said that he has been told by the doctors that PJ can't hurt his foot anymore. So really it's an issue of, as I think we were telling you last week, pain and inflammation. And Cal said, suggested maybe 15 to 18 minutes might be the max for PJ. The thing about it is everybody wants a definitive answer. And I just don't think that there is one. Part of it was for PJ seeing what he could do yesterday. It'll be more so today as he if he can go through shoot around and to what level. And then once the game starts, what can he do? How will it feel once he gets under game conditions? And then if everything goes well and Kentucky wins, how does it feel the next day? And I don't know that there's any definitive answer. They have some guidelines, I'm sure, some expectations. But I have to think the fact that and PJ said yesterday it was Cal who suggested he tweet out the video, or he said one of the coaches, I think he said Cal, but he said coach, I think. Tweeting the video on Wednesday certainly makes you think that he's going to try to play. The thing about it is, Keith Bogans tried to play in 03 and wasn't very effective. So we'll just have to see. The other storyline, I think, tonight, one of the big ones anyway, is going to be rebounding. We may have talked about this yesterday. Houston has only been out-rebounded 7 times this season, but when they have in those 7 games, that's where all 3 of their losses came. They're just 4-3 in games in which they were out-rebounded. And you think about Houston, they're not particularly big. 2 of their guards are 6'1". They are 6'8", 6'9", with their bigs. So if they're a really good rebounding team and they're not really big, would suggest that they're probably really crashing the glass, which could mean if Kentucky rebounds well on the defensive end, there might be some opportunities in transition. If a team sends 4 guys to the glass to rebound and they don't get the rebound, then you can get some numbers in transition, which could be very good for Kentucky. So going to be fun tonight here in Kansas City. Cal said he was glad it was a late game because more time for PJ to continue to heal. Because, again, when you're talking about the kinds of things he's dealing with, it's really a factor of time. And they've done everything they could to accelerate the healing process. And now we'll see how that work pays off. Last night, the big story was the Tennessee comeback and then ultimate loss in overtime against Purdue at the Yum Center, 99-94. Controversial call on a three-point shot by Carson Edwards at the end of regulation. He made two of the three free throws to send the game to the overtime, and then Tennessee goes down after making just an incredible comeback. Gonzaga won easily over Florida State, and then two ugly games late. Texas Tech pummeled Michigan by 19. Virginia holds off Oregon by 4. So it's Virginia against Purdue in the South Region Final and Texas Tech against Gonzaga in the West Region Final. And tonight, four more games. Auburn and North Carolina, of course, first up here in Kansas City. A couple of other quick notes. Baseball, number 4, Georgia beats Kentucky 7-3. Braden Daniel, 2 homers and a losing cause for Kentucky. Reds won their opener 5-3 over the Pirates. Isaac Humphreys signs a 10-day deal with the Atlanta Hawks, so we wish him well. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We'll come back, hear from Kent Spencer, and maybe hear a little sound from the locker rooms yesterday as well. A little later, Mike DeCourcy. It's the Leach Report coming to you from Kansas City today on the March to Minneapolis tour for Kentucky. 2 more wins to get to the Final Four for the Wildcats. We'll continue to talk about all of that when we come back. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter, at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome back to Kansas City. We go to the Kentucky Branded Hotline to bring on Kent Spencer from WHAS-TV, who is on the tournament trail in Jacksonville last week. Now, Kansas City this week. And Kent, what was your take on what you heard as the made your way through around the locker room yesterday?
You know, I feel like this team, and a lot of teams look for this, but I do feel, and I do get the sense, Tom, that this team has a little bit of a chip on the shoulder because things last week wasn't exactly easy for them against Wofford, and maybe there's a little doubt nationally and what they can do, and it seems like they want to prove people wrong. That was one of the senses for me. Another one, you know, there always seemed to be last week for me in the uncertainty of PJ Washington and everything that was him. There just seemed to be a little. I don't want to say a cloud because that would probably be too harsh. But there was just something there, and I think that was lifted when. Just the fact that PJ is now openly around his teammates when everybody's around and the cast is off and the scooter's gone and he's walking around. And I sensed that yesterday in the locker room, just kind of talking to guys and just the fact that he was out there on the court with him yesterday. I felt like it gave this group a little bit of a lift.
You know, you think back to the Tennessee game in Rupp Arena, how good Kentucky looked at that moment, looked like it was certainly trending very positively, and you've only had that group of players together on the floor 2 times since then, down in the SEC tournament.
No, you're 100% right. You know, after Travis went down against Missouri, those 2 games. So it's been a little bit of a mishmash. It's been different guys that have kind of stepped up in different roles at different times. And I think the one thing is that this group is still looking for is consistency from all of the guys to kind of buy in, not really buy into their roles, but execute their roles the way that they need to be, you know, one of those teams that can contend for a national championship. And I think a lot of part of that is they haven't been together. You know, they've been just kind of trying to figure things out on the fly. So if PJ Washington is able to play tonight, then it helps it out a little bit. He's not going to be the 15.7 rebound a game guy that he was, but it's a little bit of a steadying thing for them. And if he's not, they at least do have 2 games under their belt to figure out exactly how they need to play without him.
Couple of observations, and I'll get your take on this, because you're not only covered sports for a long time, you played college sports. this team, first observation, seems to really get along well. Last year's team, I don't think they had chemistry issues so much as you just had a lot of quiet guys, maybe more introverted guys. This Keldon's the biggest extrovert that's been around in a long time around here, probably. Ashton Hagens cuts up. Then you've got the kind of steadying influence of a veteran, older brother type in Reed Travis. So you have that dynamic that I sense they really do enjoy each other and playing together as well as off the court. And then the second observation is, and this kind of speaks maybe to that Chip reference you made, this team cruising off the Bahamas, you know, looks like they're close to the mountain and top of the mountain in college basketball when the season starts. And they don't just get knocked back. They get knocked back all the way to the bottom of the hill in the first game. And it just feels like all season long, they've been trying to climb back up. And every time they get close to the top, it's Seton Hall, it's Alabama, it's an injury to Reed Travis, it's an injury to P.J. Washington. They keep getting knocked back a rung or two, but they keep fighting back. So it is a resilient group as well. What's your thoughts?
No, you're right. And I think with last year's group, you brought up a good point. You know, it wasn't that they didn't like each other. Their personalities were just different. You know, like, you know, you can be around somebody and you can really like them, but the personalities aren't really the same, so you don't hang out as much. You know what I mean? There's just a different mm-hmm. thing. And I think when you look at this Kentucky team, I think, you know, it's funny. While, you know, P.J. Washington and Reed Travis are the clear leaders, I think a large part of the nucleus of this team relies around the friendship of Keldon Johnson and Tyler Hero, and it kind of branches off from there. And like, you know, you mentioned Ashton Hagens and the amount of cutting up that they'll do with each other in the locker room. You can definitely tell that this is a close-knit bunch. And when I was talking to kids yesterday, one of the things that brought up was the overlooking part, the chip on the shoulder part. And I didn't bring up the beginning of the season, but Tyler Hero did, Ashton Hagens did, that people have been doubting them from the beginning of the season. So it's something that they are well aware of. And I don't know if it's anything that this coaching staff is doing. I think it's these things because of social media today, because of, you know, how these kids can stay informed. I think it's things that they notice, and that's a motivating factor. And, you know, tonight, whether PJ Washington plays or not, it's a big step in that, because Houston may not be a household name to a lot of people. You know, obviously they were back in the 80s and before then, but they may not be a household name, but this is a really, really good basketball team. And they're a 3 seed for a reason. So Kentucky's got their work cut out for them.
It's interesting, though, what you said there, that those guys were the ones that were bringing it up. So it clearly sounds like it's a defining thing for this team in some way.
No, I think you're 100% right. I think that that this is something that this has been their calling card ever since they got smashed by Duke, and so many people jumped off that bandwagon that were, you know, thought that this was going to be one of those great teams. I think it's something that they noticed. And it's something that they are working to try to prove people wrong. And you mentioned it. Look, there's been roadblocks that's been kind of put in this thing. And those roadblocks are called injuries. And, you know, now in the last couple of games, they haven't had their best player. And there's a little bit of a cloud over whether he can play tonight or whether he can play moving forward in the tournament. But, you know, when you're a talented team, motivation can be a heck of a thing.
Let's talk about the game tonight. I would have to think one of the first things Cal will write on his board would be rebounding at the top of the list of priorities.
You know, it's funny. Both teams, because we went in the Houston locker room yesterday, and it's the first thing that Houston said, and it's the first thing that P.J. Washington and Reed Travis and Keldon Johnson, when I spoke to them yesterday, it's the first thing they said. This game's going to be won on the boards. And the one thing Reed Travis said is, when you look at this Houston team, they all go to the glass. So nobody can be sleeping. Everybody's got to be attentive, and everybody's got to be willing to do their part in order to win. And, you know, Houston, you know, they hear Kentucky's a big team. Kentucky's got length. Well, they relish the challenge of it's the best thing that they do. You know, rebounding and defense is what they do, which is funny because if you look at a John Calipari coach team, what does he want them to be great at? He wants them to be great at defense and wants them to be great on the boards. But, yeah, that's this game in a nutshell, that right there, rebounding.
What about Auburn, North Carolina? What do you think on that one?
Buckle in your seatbelt. It's going to be a heck of a ride. I think North Carolina is going to win, but I'll say this, Tom. I wouldn't be surprised if – I mean, Auburn's playing great. I mean, it dates back to probably, you know, to be honest, probably before the SEC tournament. But I really didn't start paying attention to them again until the SEC tournament just because, you know, after Kentucky beat them the way that they did in Rupp Arena, I just felt that they were done for. But they found something, and they've got a ton of confidence, and they're healthy. And those guards are just letting it fly, and Okiki is playing as well as anybody in the country. It's going to be a track meet, and I cannot wait to watch it.
What do you guess we'll see out of P.J. Washington tonight?
You know, I do think he's going to play. There's some people that I've talked to that don't think he's going to play. They're going to try to buy him one more game. But, you know, I've never, you know, we were only in there for 15 minutes yesterday, and I never analyzed a light jog more in my life than I did yesterday on a foot. And he looked good. He didn't look like he was favoring anything. So I think he's going to play. I think around what Calipari said, I think he's going to give them anywhere between 15 and 20 minutes in spurts, just like Reed Travis did his first game back. And you just kind of see where it goes from there. But any minutes that you could get from him are positive minutes and exactly what this team needs.
It's like one of those horses during Derby week that you hear has some kind of foot issue, and you're just closely watching the foot, and you're really not sure what you're looking for or looking at, but then keep you from paying really close attention.
Yeah, so for your audience, before the locker rooms come open, we wait out in the hallway so we can all go in, the media, when they have an open locker room. Well, PJ went to the podium yesterday first. He walks out along with Reed Travis and Keldon Johnson, and PJ walks down. In the amount of eyes watching a walk as he goes by, it's insane. But that's exactly where this thing has gotten over the last 2 weeks.
PJ knows what Kate Upton feels like, I guess.
And guess what? They all know it, and they all play it, and they're having fun. I mean, during practice yesterday, Calipari is saying, "PJ, you're getting your TV time now." I mean, yeah. You know, they all know, and they're kind of playing it up. And to be honest, I think last week it was a little bit of a nuisance. This week they're having some fun with it.
Kent, got to run. Thank you much.
See you, buddy.
We'll be right back. It's the Leach Report, Radio Network.
Find out more about the Voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Second half of the show here from Kansas City, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington each and every day here on the Leach Report. Mike DeCourcy joins us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. You can read him at sportingnews.com, see him on the Big Ten Network. On Twitter, it's at TSN Mike. And no better time of year, Mike. Let's talk a little bit about Kentucky-Houston and start there. We were talking with a previous guest from WHAS-TV in Louisville, Kent Spencer, about how these two teams are very similar in terms of the coaches' emphasis on defense and rebounding for their careers, really. What do you see as the defining storylines that will determine the outcome of this one tonight?
Well, I don't think there's any question it starts with PJ Washington and whether he's available to play. With PJ, they go from a team, they become a team that has a lot of weapons for a team to contend with. I mean, you look at Houston winning the American Conference, the two next best teams in their league, Cincinnati and UCF, UCF had B.J. Taylor average about 18 a game. I think Aubrey Dawkins averaged about 15. And then, of course, Taco Fall averaged 11 on his no-jump dunks. Not a lot of offensive weapons there. A very, very good basketball team, as we saw on Sunday. Cincinnati wins 28 games. Jaron Cumberland was a singular offensive force, and the rest of it was players playing off him. And Houston was able to prevail over all of that because they are a complete team. They are a very good defensive team. They have multiple weapons. Kentucky would bring, at full strength, four to five guys in a game, four to five that could get you 15 and probably four that could get you 20. And so that would be a lot for Houston to contend with, a lot more than they're accustomed to. Probably the only other game where they would have faced something similar to that was LSU, and that was when LSU was, I think, fourth or fifth game. You know, Naz Reid, obviously a talent, but kind of new to the whole deal. Javonte Smart, same thing. So this would be, in the ideal circumstance for the Wildcats, a lot more than Houston's had to contend with. I mean, even their second-round game, they're playing Ohio State, much like Cincinnati, a very, you know, an offensive team that is largely dependent on one player, in that case Caleb Wesson. And you don't have to worry that much about everybody else. No one else is going to bury you with 25 points. They're not, just not in their capability. So Houston was able to contain that very easily down the stretch on Sunday. If PJ can play and play anything like February PJ, I just don't think that Houston has enough to hold that off. Whereas as we saw on Saturday, without him, making enough baskets to win against a very good team like Wofford in that instance, and obviously tonight it would be Houston, is a real challenge for that team.
And, you know, Kentucky, Cal always, with each team, finds the best way for them to play as the season unfolds rather than trying to fit them into something he has predetermined. And as this, when this team was really rolling there in the middle of February through that Tennessee game, PJ was on a roll. And I saw a stat recently on an NBA draft site. It was a story I was reading about PJ, and it referenced a stat when he's double-teamed in the post and passes out of those double teams. Kentucky's points per possession is something close to 1.7 or a little higher.
Wow.
Which is really high, and which is really significant against a team like Houston that likes to double the post.
Absolutely. And when you don't double him, I mean, he's so effective. I'd be curious what his number is when he doesn't get doubled, what percentage he would shoot. It's really high. He's really effective with his ability to shoot that jump hook over defenders. And so it does make an enormous difference. And I'm not saying they can't find a way to gut it through against Houston if he doesn't play. I mean, it would be I would expect a similar game to what they faced against Wofford. Maybe not as many dead-eye shooters as Wofford puts on the floor, where you have to really work on the perimeter, and they did great work. And the defensive game plan, I don't think, got nearly enough credit for how they handled Fletcher McGee. I mean, Tyler Hero got a lot of credit, and good for him. I mean, because anything that builds a young player's defensive confidence is great. But a lot of that was on Fletcher has a very unusual shot. And if he comes off screens and you trail the screen, he can shoot it without setting. He turns into that shot. And it's hard to deal with. So John had them, every time they came off a screen, the big would soft hedge it so that he couldn't turn into the shot. And it completely shut Fletcher down. So they've had now 4 days to figure out Houston. So they'll be, whatever it is, whether it's Corey Davis and his ability to get the ball into the lane, whatever it is that they might think is the most important component of shutting off Houston. And I do think it starts with Davis. I'm sure they'll be ready for that. They did a terrific job on much shorter prep in dealing with Wofford's threat.
Talk with Mike DeCourcy. It's at TSN Mike on Twitter and SportingNews.com on the web. And if Kentucky comes up short of a Final Four, what I'm about to say is a story that would never get written, but maybe would if they do make it to Minneapolis, and perhaps even more so a greater chance if they would win the whole thing. Is I think maybe one of Calipari's best coaching jobs, and not just here, maybe longer term. You can speak to that better than I. But to have a team that, you know, it has a bunch of freshmen, and then you work in an older guy, but he's still a newcomer, Reed Travis, to get beat the way that they did in the first game. And then at that point, if you've got a lot of guys that think they're only going to be there 1 year, I would think that's the kind of situation where it could easily splinter on you, and they start to think, wow, this could really blow up. I better get mine. Instead, this group comes together, reinvent themselves from certainly that first game performance as the defensive team that they are now as they go into this game tonight. And and it speaks well of the coaches, but also of the players for the mindset that they had to embrace that.
You know, I don't think that Cal and his staff get enough credit in recruiting, in explaining what their process and their program are about, and getting the right players to fit that, regardless of whether they're 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the class, or 12, 13, 18, and 25, whatever the case might be. They get guys who understand what this is about and want to be part of it. And you're right, it would be easy after what happened against Kentucky for them to be down and maybe turn inward. But it's part of the character of the players that they're recruiting that they're less likely to do that. The inward, all about me kind of thing. That's not who they are. And that's been through what, 9, 10 iterations of Wildcats. And there've been very few players in that period where you could kind of really tell. And I think you know, Tom, there've been a few.
Sure.
But very few players who have been about themselves, even on a fractional basis. They have an understanding that Kentucky's success becomes their success, that if that team wins, there will be, you know, the in-state reward, so to speak, the idea that, you know, you make a Final Four, you win a national championship, you never have to buy your own beer or whatever for the rest of your life, that kind of thing. But that also pays off in what the NBA teams think of you. They can tell, and they look for little things. I'll give you a story. In 2000, Kenyon Martin and Pete Michael and Kenny Satterfield and Damar Johnson played for Cincinnati. They were number one team in the country. And something happened. I never really pinned down what, but something happened between Huggins and Pete Michael toward the end of the season. And Bob benched Pete Michael, who was the second leading scorer on the team, a real, you know, terrific defender. And he benched him for a huge game, a huge Thursday night game at DePaul. And Pete did not play in that game. And they were losing by about 10 points going into the final media timeout. And then Kenyon staged basically a one-man comeback. And one of the most, you know, until I saw what Ryan Klein did last night, probably the most amazing individual stretch of basketball that I could remember. And as it was happening, the bench is going crazy. And Pete was just sitting there watching it, like, emotionless. And I talked to an NBA scout after the game, or not after the game, but in advance of the draft, a couple months later probably, who was asking me about that, about what he saw from the bench conduct. So they see everything. People think they don't know what they're doing. They know what's happening. So they can understand what's going on in the course of a game that Kentucky plays, and also, you know, how the players conduct themselves. And John is finding the right guys to fit that scheme. John, and I shouldn't say just John, but the entire staff across the board, they are finding the right guys to fit that, selling their program, and that's why they've been able to do this year after year.
Mike DeCourcy with us, SportingNews.com. We'll be right back after this timeout. It's the Leach Report from Kansas City, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Back with Mike DeCourcy on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. One of the best games of the tournament played out last night at the KFC Yum Center with Tennessee storming back, getting the lead, then going to overtime and losing to Purdue, and debate about whether or not it was a foul, should it have been called if it was, on the Carson Edwards three from the corner at the end of regulation. Your take, Mr. DeCourcy?
Yeah, to me, you know, I'll be honest, at the time it happened, I was at the opposite end of the floor, at caddy corner. So I was on the opposite sideline and the opposite corner. So live, I couldn't have given you any idea whether it was a foul or not. I was surprised that they got a call in that circumstance, because referees often are afraid to blow the whistle at the end of a game. Having seen it on replay after I returned to my hotel room last night, there's no question it was a foul. There's a common trick that shooters will use to draw a foul in that circumstance, not just late game, but after a three-pointer that they think they might miss and there's a defender closing, they'll kick out their leg and try to get the shooter to hit the leg. And that is not supposed to be called a foul when that happens. And referees have gotten instructional videos for years on that, and they know they're not supposed to call a foul. Carson did not do that prototypical draw a foul leg kick. He was basically a shooter in typical form, and his hip was contacted. It wasn't even his leg. His hip was contacted by Lamonte Turner, who was closing out. It was a bad closeout, and it was definitely a foul. And he wasn't the only one to foul a three-point shooter last night. I believe one of Nojel Eastern's fouls that affected the game and actually had to take him out of the matchup that he was doing such a great job on shutting down Admiral Schofield in the first half was on that sort of play as well. It was a foul, and so you put Carson at the line for three free throws. He made, you know, he made it hard on himself. Everybody remembers Darius Washington from Memphis in a similar circumstance and having the chance to tie the game or win it and missing two of the three. Last week we saw the same thing with New Mexico State. They had a chance to win the game with a couple of free throws, only made one. So Carson missed the first and put himself in a real difficult spot, but then he made the two that tied it and forced overtime, and Purdue was outstanding in the extra 5 minutes.
We talked about Kentucky-Houston. Of the other games tonight, do you see any of the higher seeds that are in significant danger of losing?
Yeah, I think Michigan State, of the other three, is the one that's in trouble, and you obviously, Wildcats fans know why. LSU's players are really talented, and they are, you know, they're very alert. One of my favorite moments of the NCAA tournament was in the final minute of the LSU Maryland game when it was tied. And I don't remember how LSU got possession of the ball, whether it was tied and Maryland missed or tied and they inbounded after Maryland had tied it. But it was a tie game, about 55 seconds left, and you saw Skylar Mays and Tremont Waters say to each other, two for one. I mean, how many coaches in college basketball trust their players to run two for one that they call? These guys called it themselves, and they got Mays an open three on the left wing. He made it. Then Maryland did a great job answering that with 3 points of their own, but because they had called the two for one, they got Tremont Waters in position for the game-winning layup. So great job from them, and they'll be a real challenge talent-wise and obviously alertness-wise for Michigan State tonight.
Mike, enjoy the hoops. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Tom.
Mike DeCourcy, sportingnews.com, at TSN Mike on Twitter, and he comes to us each week courtesy of our friends at Shuffle Bean Coffee. We'll be right back. Here's some sound from P.J. Washington on the Leach Report from Kansas City. All right, we're back in Kansas City. Final segment here. Let's hear a little sound from P.J. Washington. This was after he came back from the podium to the locker room yesterday. The media horde gathered around him talking about his sprained foot and more.
It's been funny. It was just funny to see everybody freaking out about it and the tweets they were sending, stuff like that. And people were DMing me, calling me, stuff like that. So everybody's just been bugging me.
Have you seen the PJ Challenge online?
Mm-hmm. I seen it yesterday. It was kind of funny, too.
What's it like to start a meme?
I didn't even try to start it, so just for it to start was kind of funny. One of our, I think Eric told me, and I was just been looking at him and just laughing ever since.
Was it your idea to tweet out the video of you walking?
No, it wasn't.
How did you respond when somebody said, hey, you should tweet out this video of you walking?
I kind of laughed a little bit, and then I was like, maybe that's a good idea, so I just did it, and then everybody went with it.
PJ, were you black?
I don't know yet.
How hard has this been?
It's been a lot. I mean, there's a lot of pressure. A lot of people talking. But I mean, I really don't care about that. I just want to make sure my health is really where it needs to be. Then go out there and try to help my teammates.
You want to make sure that your foot is obviously right. But is it a little agonizing for yourself because you want to play in this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to play in this tournament. This is what I've been working for all year. And just to be able to sit out was definitely hard on me. Just to see our guys winning, that was definitely picking me up a little bit. And then see how excited everybody was, it's just kind of funny, I guess.
Do you ever wake up hoping that it feels a certain way?
You wake up hoping it feels 100%, but I mean, it always doesn't happen like that. So you got to go out. I've been getting treatment, trying to do everything I can to get back on the floor.
Have you done anything physically?
Mm-mm. Nah, I've just been getting treatment and stuff like that.
What did your team show you that last week without you?
That they're competitors, they're fighters, and they went out and they listened to the game plan and executed on both ends of the floor. And they showed me how focused they were and how much they want to win.
BJ, I even saw a rumor that it was Keldon's legs in the video instead of yours walking. Did you see? Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen that.
Just show you how crazy people can get sometimes.
Yeah, they've been making stuff up, saying I want to quit on my teammates and stuff like that, and that's definitely not the case. I mean, if I wasn't hurt, I'd definitely been out there playing. So,
PJ, let's say you were able to play tomorrow night. Rebounding is something that Houston does really, really well. How much is that a key in this game?
I think that's the biggest key for us. I feel like if we out-rebound them, we can go out and get into easy transition. We play really good in transition. We can get a layups and stuff like that. So we just want to push the tempo, get rebounds, and just try to play it to our advantage.
That was PJ Washington yesterday in the locker room. Donato Slice of Wildcat history. This day in 97 up in Indy, Kentucky won a national semifinal game over Clem Haskins in Minnesota. Ron Mercer had 19. Anthony Epps, 13.7 assists. Happy birthdays to Sean Woods and former Kentucky football coach Hal Mummy. And enjoy the hoops. And hopefully we'll be back with you Monday talking about the road to the Final Four for Kentucky.
The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport.com.